One. Good evening, good morning, depending on when you're listening to this. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Hoops HD report, our weekly podcast where we go over everything and anything college basketball, more or less. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by David Griggs, Joby Fort. I tell, we were supposed to have John Salica with us as well. He just popped off. I think he left, must have seen David and ran. We got a lot to get to tonight, going over all the events and some crazy games in the Big 12 especially, which we'll get to in a moment here. But John T, I want to start with you because McDonald's All-American roster just got released today. I think you got a little report for us on that, correct?
I do. So to nobody's surprise, the two teams with the most are Duke and Kansas with three each. Duke led by R.J. Barrett, the number one overall recruit from Canada. He's going to come in at the small forward spot and be an instant superstar. I don't know if he's going to be Marvin Bagley level, but he's going to be great. Other non-surprises, Kentucky with two, Oregon with two, and North Carolina with two. The ginormous surprise that I still can't understand is a little SEC school called Vanderbilt with two McDonald's All-Americans, Darius Garland and Simi Solashidu. Like, I don't know what is going on down there, but I think that the coach needs a big raise because I never thought I'd see Vanderbilt with one, much less two McDonald's All-Americans.
Well, the absence of Kevin Stallings is paying dividends.
you took the words right out of my mouth, David.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's something definitely to keep a look on as we go, after the season, especially as we head towards next season. But let's kind of swing back to this season. And I'm going to go ahead and pull up some standings and some scores on the screen here right now. And we're going to start in the Big 12 once again. I think we start with the Big 12 a lot this season because of the quality of the play in it. And it was a heck of a week for a few teams. Wow. But, David, let's start with the big one right there on Saturday, the Texas Tech-West Virginia game, because that made news not only for the game itself but for what happened after the game.
Well, yeah, it kind of was a signature win for Texas Tech. I know that they were at home, but that's just it. I don't recall the last time Texas Tech was at home as a top 10 team beating the second-ranked team in the country. You could argue that it was, although it was just a regular season game, it was still one of the more signature moments in their entire basketball history. Not the biggest, but one of them. I mean, it was a very special moment that kind of had a sour end that I don't want to talk about it. Do we have to?
Well, it was
a court. Can't we just talk about basketball?
It was a court storming, and
which is understandable given the gravity or the magnitude of the win, at least to me. But okay, what happened?
I am sorry, and this is where you and I are going to differentiate on this. I don't think a court storming is proper ever. I am sorry that you do not get a seat to the game to go and be out there in the middle of the court. You get a seat to the game to go and sit in your seat and cheer and applaud on the team. And once again, we had an ugly incident with the court storming, players throwing punches at fans. And I think, Tytel, I don't know where you stand on this, but I think this is just as much Texas Tech's fault, if not more so, even if the West Virginia kid was the one throwing the punch, because the fans shouldn't have been there to be in the first place.
We have a couple of different issues going on here. One is safety. It's hard to say that anything should be allowed at any campus sporting event that is going to put anyone in danger because the kids are there to go to school, get an education, have fun, not get hurt. So if you don't have security in place or can't assure everyone's safety, I have a big problem with it. That being said, on one level, it's important to celebrate your team's win, and there are better ways to do it than jumping around on the court, but I think it's a nice tradition that when done correctly is good. For example, I will be at the Villanova-Georgetown game tomorrow night. If the Hoyas pull off the upset, do you think they're going to storm the court? Of course they will.
Chad, you're going to be surprised by this, but I'm still not all the way on your side of the fence, but I'm closer to the fence than I've ever been before. I will say this, though. Tonight, I turn on the game, Clemson, North Carolina, and they begin the broadcast with a court storming from I don't know however many years ago. Obviously, the game was at Clemson. So when you're leading off your broadcast, and that's not unusual, I remember a few years ago, it was either a year or two ago, when there was an incident at Kansas State, same conference, where a Kansas player was not attacked, that's overstating it, but he was assaulted by a fan. Like, they ran right into him, shoved him, and ESPN's on the air, this is horrible, this is horrible. That same night, there was another game where they had a court storming, oh, what a beautiful thing. So it's romanticized, whether it should or shouldn't be on national television. Would you at least agree with that? And I think that that perpetuates the thinking that when you win a big game, when you beat a ranked team at home that you're not supposed to beat, the one or two times it happens, if that, then you're almost expected to run out there. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
Contrast that to the Ohio State-Michigan State game that took place about a week and a half ago, where the Buckeyes did upset Michigan. Well, we thought it was an upset at the time, but
yeah.
Ohio State at least let Michigan State, their coaches and their players, get off the floor before they started to allow fans onto the floor to celebrate with the Ohio State team. So in that regards, I would definitely agree with the issue of at least, at the very least, getting opposing coaches and players off the floor in a timely manner.
And I've seen it. I've seen a wall of security to protect the players and get them off while then the fans go on the other side of the court. But even then, Joby, I think that David was right, though, about romanticizing on TV. What if we just stopped showing it? If ESPN stopped broadcasting the court storming,
not going to stop it.
I think it will, though. I think it will cut it down.
That's not going to stop it. No, Chad, that's not going to stop it. Most of the time, remember, we're dealing with college kids. We're not dealing with the fans writ large for the most part. This is the student sections releasing out. They are going to run out. It is usually not choreographed whatsoever. And that's the argument with showing it over and over again. I think most of the time it is, oh, let's do it. Oh, my gosh. And you got a bunch of, yeah, and I'm sure there's alcohol involved, and that's not necessarily positive. But the fact is, I don't think you can fully stop this 100%. I don't think it's all bad. I think what you need to do, though, and John's hitting on it, David's hitting on it, is you need to make sure, and they did the best they could at the Texas Tech West Virginia situation, is you need to first and foremost protect the visiting team. And like, if there's a last second shot done, there's not a lot you can do because there's players out on the court, et cetera, and this just happens. But in a case where the outcome is pretty evident with 10 seconds to go and 30 seconds to go, get the guards ready, get them up, and protect the opposite team. That's the best thing you can do. I don't think you can fully stop it. Hey, it's not a bad thing what the SEC's done. Fines, et cetera. But I think we're a little Pollyannish to think we can wave a magic wand, we can stop showing it, and then all of a sudden, bam, it won't happen anymore. I think it's going to happen.
Well, there's a big difference between the Big 12 fining Texas Tech $25,000. I think even the Big East has token fines, but the SEC that you mentioned, those are six-figure fines that they're levying.
Well, students aren't paying it. I mean,
yeah, but let the conferences decide upon themselves. You know, it kind of being a federalist in this case, I guess, among it. And hey, if that's the way the SEC wants to deal with it, great. If the ACC, I bet, is a little more lax. If the ACC or the American, I don't know what their statuses are a little more lax, and that's the way it is. And you open yourself up for liability, maybe. I don't know. But I don't think you can just put it – I don't think you can put the genie back in the bottle, even if you didn't show it.
I think you can, at least to a degree. If they come out there and they say any student – that runs out onto the floor is suspended from the university for a semester or a year, and any fan that does it that's not a student is banned from the arena for a year, you would reduce it dramatically. But do you want to be that harsh about it? I still think that a lot of schools kind of like – I mean, who doesn't like winning a big game? It's a scene, and when you walk around arenas, no matter what level, a lot of the times you'll see posters and pictures. The arena I – used to work at had a picture of a court storming in it. And again, is it good? Is it bad? But you don't – I don't know. I never really agree with Chad. And during championship week, God, it was great watching these teams win the conference tournaments and the fans coming onto the court. And I still like a good court storming, but I'm going to step way out of character and say that I do think Chad has a point. Don't agree with it, but I think that
there is a happy medium here. So, something where, hey, we set up a security wall, we give enough time for the players to leave the court, and then they can go and play their games and do whatever they want to do.
And maybe you can do that if the outcome looks apparent, but if it's a last second shot, I think it's good.
But if it's a close game like that, Joby, if it's a close game like that, you could have the security ready to go. You could have them there. But we do need to move on here, and I want to talk about one other team in the Big 12, and that's Kansas, who I think this week reestablished themselves as a dominant force in the Big 12, sneaking by Kansas State, but then the huge win last night at West Virginia. And Tytel, I wanted to pull up something here for you. Take a look at the graph here from last night's this is the win probability graph from KenPom.com for last night's Kansas-West Virginia game.
What this shows is that the Mountaineers had a 16-point first-half lead, and then they decided to shoot 5 of 27 from behind the arc, and they blew it, which is why it looks like a roller coaster. The other amazing stat for me, West Virginia with West Virginia, they're like get more steals than anyone. Kansas had 9 steals to West Virginia's 5. So this shows, I think, that Kansas is for real, and anybody who thinks they're not going to win the Big 12 title this year, good luck with that prediction for the 13th or 14th straight year in a row.
It was one of the more – I think it was singularly the most impressive singular win of the season to beat a team as good as that on their floor. The way that they did it, I mean when they fell behind, who in their right mind thought Kansas was coming back? It was the most gutty, the most impressive. What a win. Wow.
What a win. And Stalika, I want to take a look at the other side of the Big 12, though, also. Are we just about done with Baylor yet? A bad, bad loss to Iowa State.
But much like the telltale heart, they're still beating after the home win against Oklahoma State. I mean, it keeps them biologically alive, but they're starting to run out of opportunities, especially since they've had Iowa State's number at Hilton Coliseum in recent years, and this is the one year where they're unable to pull off the win. That's still a bad sign.
Chad, they are not out of opportunities. This is what I've been kind of harping on. Because they play in the Big 12, they are very much alive. They could wind up –
they have opportunities, Joby. I see nothing here that makes me believe they can win these games.
Right. Now, I don't know if they can, but the thing is, actually, I think they do have some talent. They have some good wins on their resume. The fact of the matter is, Baylor, because they have the benefit of playing the Big 12, will have a chance at Texas Tech in Waco all of a sudden. You know, they're going to have these chances. I don't think they win in Allen Fieldhouse this week, but that's not to say they go out and beat a Kansas State team, which right now at the half is leading Oklahoma by 5. That they're going to have chance after chance after chance. They need to pick off one in the road. Maybe it's in Lubbock. Maybe it's in Norman. They need to pick one of those off. I don't know if they can, but they're going to get plenty of opportunities in Waco, which I think they probably will defend their home court because they're good enough to do so, to rack up nice looking like 4-5 wins against teams that will be dancing come March.
All right, and here's the upcoming schedule in the Big 12. David, he mentioned already that Baylor-Kansas game. We got Bedlam round 2 coming up on Saturday. West Virginia, you know, after the 0-2 week needs to come up with a couple wins. They've got shots here at home against Texas at TCU as well next Monday night.
Yeah, it's a big week for TCU too, who's played really well, but I believe I got it right here. They're just 1-4 in conference play. They need to start winning some games. I think they will, but if they drop 2 more and fall to 1-6, are they losing their grip on a bid? I mean, you don't really think that they would, but they might be.
Yeah, the numbers are all still there if you look at them, but other than that conference record, which is they really got to improve that. They got to be maybe not even 500 to make a bid, but probably, you know, no more than, you know, two games under 500 to get talking like a, you know, a, was it an 8-10 or something along those lines?
Yeah, 8-10 and then 9-11 if they, assuming they don't win the conference tournament. So,
Let's head over to the SEC, though, where as we record, this is a couple games going on, including, I believe Kentucky was in a battle right now with South Carolina. We are recording this around a little before 10 p.m. on Tuesday evening. There's the past week's results, including a really good game tonight between Georgia and LSU. But Sleeka, what are your thoughts on what you saw this past week in the SEC?
It was a nice win in the closing seconds for Georgia, where they were able to get the game winner with about 5 seconds left and withhold a late LSU challenge. That was offset a little bit because they lost at home to South Carolina over the weekend. South Carolina and Georgia seems to be a little weird in that the team that's below the bubble usually has a knack for beating the team above the bubble, although this time it was Angry Frank's crew that got to play spoiler here. But LSU, what's odd about them is that both of their wins have come away from home, and they have the three home losses against Kentucky, Bama, and now Georgia. That's one of my takeaways.
Yeah, really interested there on LSU and Tytel. Texas A&M is now 0-5 in conference. Is it panic time yet?
Yeah,
it should be. I mean, what more do you need to do to hit the panic button? I got to sadly watch most of the game last Tuesday when they lost to Kentucky by a point thanks to a 5-hour flight delay at Reagan National Airport. Thank you very much. The Aggies at least have a bench. 24-7, they outscored the Wildcats. But when you're missing 10-plus free throws a game, to be fair, both teams did. But if you're going to miss so many free throws, that's how you're going to lose one-point games. And they are plummeting in my bracketology. I think I have now about an 8 or 9 seed. If the slide continues, I think they're going to be off the bubble in the weeks ahead.
David, you already threw them off in your bracket that you released this morning or yesterday morning, I believe. You threw them right on out there, didn't you?
Yeah, and again, well, they're 0-5 after 5 conference games. There's only been one team ever that's been 4 games below 500 that got a bid. They were slightly better than this Texas A&M team. I just can't get past that. And again, that was me doing what I would do if I were Czar, and I should be Czar. I've yet to hear any proposal that I think would work better than just me being in charge of everything, the committee, the college basketball, and everything. But you know, what? I'm trying to finish my thought here, trying to make it better. But yeah, I've been really unimpressed with A&M, but they're winning tonight. If they can string some wins together, and I think they're good enough to do that, they'll be back inside. But like Tytel said, if they continue to drop, they're not going anywhere.
Well, Joby, kind of my thought when I keep looking at the SEC is you look at the Big 12, for example, you're looking at 4, maybe 5 teams that are looking at being possibly protected seeds. When you look at the SEC, you're looking at a ton of bids, but I'm not seeing that dominant team. I'm not seeing a team that's even a slam dunk, you know, 3 seed or 4 seed at this point.
Yeah, right now, I mean, the resume of, for instance, of Auburn, Kentucky, you know, Tytel called me out last week, I think very appropriately, correctly, that they are a protected seed right now. Auburn would be a protected seed right now. Notice I ended every sentence with right now because they could easily – those teams, you're exactly right, Chad. There's so many good teams, very good teams in the SEC. Don't expect Kentucky and Auburn to finish up at, you know, with 0, 1, or 2 losses. They're going to wind up – I suspect the regular season champs going to have 5 losses. And that will probably really harm their ability to get a protected seed. I think they'll probably squeeze 1 or 2 out. But we don't say it's definitely Auburn and Kentucky. It could be. Heck, Georgia's win tonight's beautiful. Let's say Georgia goes on this amazing run and beats all these teams like a Tennessee, et cetera, et cetera. Then all of a sudden we're talking Georgia, who was out of our field last week as maybe a potential protected seed. But – you've got to do – it's going to be someone will rise to the top, and that's why the protected seed will come, because there are 7-8 bids in this league.
Well, I agree that there should probably will end up being a protected seed, but I'm not seeing the multiple protected seeds. I mean, if you look historically, while AP and coaches polls are not an indicator at all of who's going to be the fielder, who's not, there's a decent correlation between those numbers and actual final seeds, especially the top 16 to 20 teams at the end of the year. You have Kentucky 16 in the coaches poll, and that's it right now. If you look at these two columns here,
Auburn's.
But
you mean ranked? Okay,
17th.
Auburn would be a protected seed. The committee would give them a protected seed right now. I'm extremely convinced. The voters just have this stupid, hey, did you lose and move up and all the slotting system. Auburn's a victim of being underappreciated to begin the year. I'm not saying Auburn's world beaters, but look at that. I mean, come on. That's a nice profile right now.
No, I'm sorry. You dig into that a little bit. When at Tennessee is really looking nice.
The Arkansas other is good. Tier one, Middle Tennessee on a neutral court's good. At Mississippi State is a solid win. I'm not saying it's the best, but it is a solid win. A Dayton we can throw out.
Exactly. But you're seeing a couple wins in the top tier. They're only in the top tier because they were on the road.
Murray State is a good, you know, at Murray State, Hofstra's a good team, beating them on a neutral court. They're actually some strong, and Connecticut's better than a third tier. They're not first tier. They're probably a second tier.
I don't know. Yeah.
Look at the predictive metrics, too.
It's a good
26 predictive metrics. Those are not very high predictive metrics. The Ken Pom's actually his best. Sagarin hates Auburn at 34.
Look at mine. Look at KPI.
Auburn ever due to this?
Strength of record. The resume ones, which I think the committee values more in how they evaluate a team, 6-7-6. Now, I'm not saying they're a two seed even right now, but 6-7-6, that's pretty darn strong. Predictive is not, in my opinion, until the committee changes their nitty-gritty sheet, predictive is not as telling as I think, you know, your KPIs are, and I would brag on mine.
Here's the upcoming schedule, David, in the SEC. Is there any games that you're really looking forward to here coming up, possibly this weekend with some of those matchups?
Arkansas versus Florida, not that I have it circled because I think it's just this great clash of the Titans. It's just the sense of urgency in that game for both teams is pretty big. Mizzou, Tennessee, probably two tournament teams there.
The circle. That's a good
one. I mean, that's Auburn, the one. Alabama. Yeah. Can Mississippi State finally win a decent road game at Alabama? But if I'm looking at one, it's got to be that it's got to be that Arkansas-Florida game tomorrow.
Okay. Well, then let's go on and let's turn back over to the ACC, where Titel, Clemson tonight has made it 0-59 all time at North Carolina. Next year or 2 years now, actually, because they only play every other year at Carolina now. 2 years now, they'll be going for 0-60. By far the worst losing streak and ever by one team at another team.
I think it reaches a point where it gets into their head. I wonder if they're going to interview Brownell after the game and ask him, like, do you talk about the streak or do your players think about it? Like, even if he says no, I find it hard to believe. It's one thing if you've lost to a team like 10 in a row or 11 in a row or whatever. When you haven't beaten them since you've been alive, it has to, like, stick to you and get in your head, right?
I think to a degree it does.
The Ofer does it. I think if it had been, we've only won one of the last 10 years, I don't think that would do it. It's when you have an Ofer forever.
Yeah.
It's such a notable thing, and every time that game starts, that's the headline that starts off the coverage. The players know it. You know, the coaches know it. The fans know it. It's in your face.
Some of the games have been competitive. That's one of the things. I mean, it isn't a Colgate-Syracuse situation where it's just there. Almost none of them are. Like, Clemson's been right in there. They weren't really tonight, although I think they got as close as 3 points or four points. But
they did.
Was it a year or two ago? It went in the double overtime. Yeah. So,
but North Carolina even beat them in the Matt Doherty year, so that's all I got to say. But Salika, I highlighted the RPI column there. If you look in that column right now, the ACC has the top three teams and four of the top 10 teams in the nation in the current RPI, Duke, Carolina, and Virginia. Do we have a shot at 3-1 seeds out of this conference?
I don't know if it's going to end up that way, honestly. I mean, I'll even be surprised if there's going to be a single conference that even manages two protected seeds because of the parity. But one team I think we have to highlight that's getting completely forgotten, and that's Louisville. I mean, they've been kind of petering along, at least holding serve, but in the past week they won at Florida State, and tonight they also won a double overtime thriller at Notre Dame.
Yeah, they've had a good week, and they needed a good week.
Yeah. I think the other question for Louisville is –
I mean, those are great road wins.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah.
I was going to say, assuming the NCAA does not.
Now they're in. I mean, they're not solidly in, but they were out of the field, and now they're in the field as of today or tonight.
Yeah, there it is. None of their losses are bad at all. I mean, those are as quality of losses as you could have on a profile, too, when you look at the losses. So I agree. You can't leave this team out, Tytel, can you, at the moment?
Not at the moment, but if you fast forward a month, starting after Valentine's Day, they get North Carolina at Duke, at Virginia Tech, and host Hoos. I mean, you think they're winning more than one of those four? I think they're going 1-3.
If they win all four of those, then you can't leave them out.
They're a number one season if you do that.
Yeah.
Because they're winning the regular season title in the conference.
Yeah.
But Joby, what about this Carolina team here? They are now number two in the RPI with the number one strength of schedule in the nation, but it just doesn't look that good when I see them, yet they've been picking up the quality wins.
They're a good team. I'll be honest, my school's game, which when they took it to Carolina, I think had put a lot on when you combine that, followed by the Wake games. They just looked bad, and it's because the matchup, especially against Virginia, just is an awful matchup for North Carolina because Luke May gets shut down. And when Luke May gets shut down, they don't have a ton of scoring options beyond Barry, who is amazing. But then the other loss they have when you end the conference is on the road to Florida State in the final seconds. I mean, that's not embarrassing. Florida State is a borderline tournament team. Away.
Oh, wow. I think they're easily on the top half of the – well, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't want to over – given how Florida State's played in their recent loss, I don't want to oversell them. But North Carolina is a good team there, protected seed level. One line, no. They're not a one line. Number one seed, I don't think, in ability. And they're going to have to go through Duke and Virginia to get there, and they've already missed their shot at Virginia. So, North Carolina, it's a blue blood team, and they're playing like a blue blood. They're good.
We might tease this a little bit later on, but who would love to see Virginia and Cincinnati in the Sweet 16 come March?
I'd rather watch just about anything else.
Tytel, I'm going to pop another win probability graph here for you. This was last night's Duke-Miami game. You want to talk about roller coasters. Hopefully it's on the screen there.
Yeah, it is.
It is a crazy game. I thought Duke was done, and I was sadly mistaken thanks to Gary Trent coming out of nowhere. He's like – I don't even think he's one of the three best freshmen on the team, and he had 30 points, made six threes. Somehow, the Blue Devils shot better from behind the arc, 11 of 21, than they did from the free throw line, only 10 of 21, which makes no sense. Hurricanes up 13 points with 8 minutes left. You're supposed to win those games. And then you got outscored 30-9 and blew it. Horrible, horrible choke job.
It was. Yeah. Dude. I mean, it's the guttiest road win I've seen. Easily of the year. Maybe for a while. That was, in my opinion, Duke's most impressive win period so far.
Well, Joby, here's the upcoming schedule for the next week in the ACC. Beginning with the Pitt-Syracuse game that's going on right now as we record this. What are you circling there?
yeah, here's a game I'm going to pick out that doesn't necessarily jump out to the normal person. I'm going to pick out Florida State at Virginia Tech, because Virginia Tech is actually, you know, they were in most people's fields preseason. They still are a good team. They played an awful preseason schedule. That out of conference schedule was, and that's what's costing them as much as anything else. They couldn't pile up the wins. But if they get the win in Blacksburg and right the ship, they'll be sitting back even in the conference, and maybe can start getting more wins like that. You can start talking about them for a bid once again. They need to do it. They need the wins in conference, because sure as hell didn't play anybody out of conference to give them credit. But this is a good enough team to be able to make a run. So I'm going to pick out Florida State at Virginia Tech to watch out, because if Florida State goes into Blacksburg, goes into Castle and beats them, they might be done.
I'll tell you, the other game that I would kind of half circle here, believe it or not, is Sunday's BC at Louisville game. BC wins that game. We got to start talking about them.
I don't want to talk about
them, but we might have to.
I think you did. Hell, they almost, you know, the same as North Carolina walks into John Paul Jones and gets blown out. Remember, preceding that game, BC dang near stole one in Charlottesville. So it's like, yeah, after beating Duke in Boston and Chestnut Hill. So it's not a crazy thing to be talking about Boston College. They have some nice wins.
Let's move over to the Big East. And Sleeka, this is your conference. I'll bring you in for it here, where Wednesday night Xavier didn't bother showing up, but they did bounce back with a nice win over Creighton.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. For the fifth straight year, he had another blowout win, or blowout loss, I should say, in Philly. But by the same token, they were able to rebound against Creighton, which has been kind of a bad matchup for Xavier in recent years. But they catch a break this time with Marcus Foster getting in early foul trouble, and Rodney Harrell Jr. was the only other Creighton player that really showed up on a consistent basis. So it gave Xavier a much-needed win, and Seton Hall, even with a loss at Marquette, still sitting pretty in the tie for first right now.
Yeah, it's just that Xavier-Villanova game at Villanova. Now, Xavier's been more competitive at home, but the game at Villanova, I think every time they've met, Stalika can correct me if I'm wrong, both teams have been ranked in the top 15. It was one of the showcase games for the conference, because Xavier-Villanova always two of the top teams, and all the games have just been – Xavier's just been boat raced every single time. It's like, wouldn't it be good for the conference if Xavier could at least compete in that showcase game between two top 15 teams every now and then?
Well, another showcase game coming up this weekend. I tell Xavier's going to be at Seton Hall. Actually, a couple of nice games here also, with the Creighton-Providence game looking like it might be a good one this weekend. Seton Hall-Creighton tomorrow night is also.
Huge week for Seton Hall. I still don't know what this team is made of, because the metrics look great, as everyone can see. Strength of schedule, top 25 in the nation, and they've only lost three games. So they seem legit. If you can beat at Creighton and then host Xavier and sweep those two, then I think you are solidly a protected seed. If not, I think you're middle of the pack, probably going to lose in the second round of the tournament. Huge week for Seton Hall.
Let's jump over to the Big Ten, David, where we already talked about Michigan State. What's going on here?
Well, they're not playing very well. They've lost two of their last three. Ohio State blew their doors off. They had to sweat out Rutgers at home. It was at Rutgers, excuse me. But, like, no, Rutgers –
It was at home. The game was in East Lansing, yes.
Yeah, they needed overtime to beat Rutgers at home, and then they lose to Michigan. Now, Michigan's not chopped liver. In fact, like, from that, I took that I was – more so impressed with Michigan, but I was at the same time disappointed in Michigan State. They're just really rough week. Another team, and well, we'll get to this here in a minute, but Nebraska, really looking good, but you have to keep in mind that there's this conspiracy against them. It's starting on the dark web. I have evidence of it. It's the officiating. It's and there you go. See, again, here's more evidence of it. Every time I try to bring it to light, I get buzzed. But it's a dark web conspiracy. The committee's going to factor that in. Wouldn't you agree, Tytel?
No, I would buzz you.
I think you need to stop eating Tide Pods, puppet.
Oh, God. Joby, on the other side of the Big Ten, probably, from the way Michigan State is playing, Purdue, yes. I mean, rolls Minnesota, rolls Wisconsin tonight. Oh, how gracious. Good.
They are good. Oh, my gosh. You know that, I mean, and, hey, they're the Big Ten, they're down, but they're going to have a one seed. Yep, that's still true.
I mean, it has to be Purdue.
The Emperor has no clothes. The Emperor has no clothes. Michigan State's been a little exposed over the last week. I mean, their resume is starting to conform with reality, you know, and in its place rises the boiler. And right for now, Purdue looks – and, yes, I know Ohio State's also undefeated, but I'm going to give the advantage to Purdue on how they've looked. This team is good. This team is legit. This team, I expect, will be a one seed come March. I think things have played out. And remember, they're out of conference, they were pretty darn good too. So
everyone who thought that Michigan State would be tied with Indiana in the standings right now, raise your hands, please.
Oh, wow.
Segue to the next round of games, please.
Josh, before we go there, Tytel, Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan State, all still having very good seasons. Is there a fifth team in the Big Ten that's even looking like a tournament team?
Maryland? Yes, when you look at the dark web conspiracy.
Give it to David. He's been waiting all day for this one.
Well, yeah, when you give it to – I mean, when you look at the dark web conspiracy that they've had to overcome, of course they're looking like a tournament team. Nebraska.
Let's take a look at this. Like, you wanted to discuss next week's coming up games of the Big Ten. There you go. There's the schedule.
Yeah, specifically, I want to discuss the aforementioned Indiana Hoosiers because they are going to be going to East Lansing to face the Spartans. And right after that, they will also be playing Maryland at home. So if they want to prove themselves as opposed to just beating up on the Summit League quality teams of the Big Ten, now is their chance.
I'm sorry. I got to stop you there. I got to pull up Indiana's profile here. Beating up on the Summit League teams?
I thought even Michigan State.
They lost to Fort Wayne by 20 points at home. They lost to the Summit League team.
I don't even Michigan State.
Missouri Valley.
Yeah.
Indiana. Yeah. Okay. Let's not talk about Indiana anymore this year. Let's instead take a look over at the Pac-12.
This year. Let's not even mention them.
This right. year. Done.
Wow. That is a declaration right there.
Well, anyway. David, can you take back the Indiana State and the Fort Wayne losses?
No, I would not.
Okay. Then thank you. Tytel, how about this first place Stanford Cardinal?
I got to tell you, like, as much as I want to toot my Wildcats horn, you look at the Cardinal schedule. They lost at home to Cal to finish off December. I thought they were done. And then they come back and beat UCLA in double overtime, make a half-court shot to beat USC by a point, sweep the Washington schools by 9 each, who are obviously both having an off year, but on the road. I mean, I'm not ready to put this team anywhere near the tournament. But the fact that they're 4-1, kudos, very impressive.
And on the other side here, David, Arizona State suddenly looking very mortal with the loss to Oregon, almost losing to Oregon State, not going the right way for the Sun Devil.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of, they're still good. I still think that they're safe and they're still having a big year, but I don't think that they're playing over their heads the way they were or appeared to be in some of those out-of-conference games. I was surprised at how much they struggled at home against the Oregon schools. And conversely, Arizona, while they got the wins, it didn't come easily against Oregon either. Oregon State they didn't have that much trouble with. But I was getting ready to think, boy, if Oregon gets both of these, do we have to start looking at them again? Well, they didn't get both of these, so I guess it's a moot point, but.
Stalicki had a comment on him.
Here is a fun fact that they had on screen when they had the Arizona State-Oregon State game. The Beavers going into that game had lost 75 consecutive games against ranked teams on the road. That looked like that streak was going to be in jeopardy, but that is a tough way to go to 76 when you look at how that ended.
Yeah. Well, that is some trivia right there.
I guess the only other thing, Joby, is USC finally did get a couple wins this week. Are they heading back in the right direction?
They're getting – yes. They still haven't gotten – they beat the schizo team known as Colorado. I mean, yeah, talk about a team that, I mean, is all over the place. It's Colorado. Get big wins and then lose. But USC still hasn't fully impressed, but they're starting to put things together that show – they're not the top 10, 15 team that everybody had preseason. But maybe if they start building by getting the win like they did against Colorado this week and building upon that in Utah, those are solid wins, to be honest. NIT-ish wins at a minimum. And if they can pull off an Arizona school win or something somewhere along the way, maybe they can squeak into this dance at the end of the year. But they're going – the margin for error, they've really put themselves behind the eight ball. Their margin for error is less than it is for a lot of other teams, including some of their Pac-12 brethren.
Well, I circled the highlight of the two games that I want to really keep an eye on this week here in the Pac-12. How real is Stanford's sudden turnaround here, Tytel, getting both Arizona schools at home this week?
It's the question that I can't – it seems ridiculous to me. Is it possible that Stanford could win the Pac-12 and miss out on the tournament? It's like impossible. But
no.
It could happen.
If they win the Pac-12, their resume is going to be looking a lot better than what it is.
I don't know about that. They could be like 20-10 with like a lot of bad losses. They lost to Cal.
Well, yeah.
I forget the year, but Washington has shown that it can be done where you actually win the regular season.
Yeah, that's right. The only team that the Pac-12 had inside the bubble that year was Cal, and I think they were in the opening, the first four. So
now Arizona and right now Arizona State make this Pac-12 by their mere presence much better than that Pac-12. If you are to be Stanford, especially since we're dealing – with a lot of play between the teams. You know, Stanford's going to get the host both Arizona schools this week, as we see. If they get to that point where they win the conference or even share the conference, they're going to probably have to beat an Arizona school along the way and wind up with a gaudy record. So who knows? I think if Stanford were to go 14-4, which are 13-5, I think they're probably going to be able to punch a ticket.
I wish Rocco were here that he could give us some specifics, but Stanford did have some injuries to deal with at a conference. They are healthy now, and they are starting to pile together win after win.
And their metrics, I can only speak to mine watching it. In a matter of 1 week, they jumped from the 200s to 100. They're flying up the metrics. Their metrics aren't impressive right now, but they're flying forward. And if they do well this week, they'll fly even further.
Speaking of unimpressive,
and by the way, UConn did not score 20, Chad, in the first half. You'll be happy to know.
UConn failed to get 20. At halftime today between Cincinnati and UCF, it was 19-16. The most pathetically bad conference to watch in the entire nation. Mind-numbing, wanting to shoot yourself for watching these games. But David, we do still have two teams with very good numbers up there with Cincinnati and Wichita State.
Yeah, and those are good teams. Well, Cincinnati at least is a good defensive team. It is painstaking. And I think those are I think you got two teams that are safely inside the bubble, one that's a potential protected seed. A smattering of NIT teams in Houston and UCF, and then a bunch of crap. And why is – SMU might be an NIT team. Like, how did this league get so bad? What happened?
Well, I think SMU is an interesting team to take a quick look at here, Tytel. We were talking about this team as being an NCAA potential team, but that has completely collapsed in the last couple of weeks here, hasn't it?
I couldn't have said it better. I'm embarrassed that they are in my most recent bracket, and I assure you that they will probably not be there. As of 2 weeks ago, I had them as a 9 seed. Last week, an 11. I think I'm ready to throw them off the bubble.
When you look at some of the – one of the stories in this league is Tulane. Now, they're not a tournament-caliber team, so they're not going to get a lot of talk. But they are much improved, and they might have a future. And Houston, I think, has at least a pulse. But, like, this is kind of the second year in a row where we've seen not a whole lot of good teams in the league. Like, last year we had SMU and Cincinnati, neither of them close to a protected seed. I thought Wichita State would breathe a lot of life into this conference. I thought it would actually be pretty good this year. It's not, though. And what's happening to the American in basketball and longevity? Is it going to be able to ever come back?
Well, that's a tough question, but I think it can. I think especially with Wichita State there, David. But Joby, I wanted to discuss this Houston team with you because your J&G ratings like this as an NCAA tournament.
I'm hoping that it gets normed out, that they're pushed out over time, but could they be this year's Tulsa? They could.
They've got Wichita State once left, but it's a home game. They got Cincinnati twice still, so they'll have
chances. I'm not, and they can lose that if they get even one of those and they don't lose a stupid game. All of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, maybe they can lose at SMU or something. But if they don't lose a stupid game, all of a sudden, yes, Drexel, awful, yuck. But you're going to have, you know, an Arkansas win, a win over an Arkansas team that's solidly in the field. Providence is probably right now, after last night, in the field barely, but they have a chance. And then you need a win against one of the American teams in. All of a sudden you're going, okay, it's better than that crappy-ass 0-5 Texas A&M team, you know, if A&M has a 6-12 SEC record. And so, even though A&M, I think, is a much better team than Houston, I think the resume could be good enough if they're sitting at a reasonable, at a really nice overall record of, like, 24-6 with one more quality win and no more bad losses.
Well, at least all of Texas A&M's losses were against tournament teams. None of those were against Drexel.
There's only one. Yeah. But the other ones are not embarrassing losses.
Well, on two occasions
– I think the committee will give you one mulligan.
On two occasions, I've pegged Texas as a tournament – or I'm sorry, I've pegged Houston as a tournament-caliber team, and they proceeded to prove me unbelievably wrong. Right. So I am not doing it again.
I mean, they can lose to South Florida tomorrow, and we're done with them. We can go bye.
Right. Well, Tytel, let me throw this out to you, and you know, have you answer this question here that you just texted over to me. But is there any chance that the committee may have a sympathy vote of sorts for Houston here, given what happened in the city there last year?
My gut says no. I think, and I don't know off the top of my head, but for some reason, I think in the past that, like, there have been some teams where players died, like, during the offseason, and I don't know. I have no idea if that has ever come into play where a bubble team has gotten a sympathy vote because of that. Certainly, if there's been serious injuries, like the Kenyon Martin broken leg from a couple decades ago, as Jonas is only oh so aware, they do have some sympathy for injuries. It's weird. It's kind of a unique circumstance. And, like, I remember I was trying to do some preseason stuff, and Houston just never posted its roster. They were one of the last teams in the nation, and I was getting pissed off because I want to do my work. I realized, wake up, John. Like, they have a gazillion things more important than posting their freaking basketball roster. They were literally underwater for most of the summer.
Well, I do have the upcoming week in the American up on the screen here. Big week for Wichita State, actually, hosting SMU, then a road trip to Houston. Also, a pair of non-conference games here on Saturday. It was UConn hosts Villanova and gets crushed. And Temple at Penn, Tytel, huge Big Five matchup. Got to throw that one back over to you.
I do want to pick my boys with the home upset, especially because I think we might actually win the Ivy League this year, which is amazing because we barely made the Ivy tournament in its inaugural year last year. But I think Dunphy gets the win just because I know he's got a losing record, and I know he's only one win in conference, but that strength of schedule number four, he's played a lot better teams than Penn all year long. So I think the Owls will get it done.
Salika, here is coming up the Atlantic 10 standings. Are we just talking about a single bid league at this point with Rhode Island, especially with their win over the Bonnies over the weekend?
I think we're probably going to see Rhode Island as the only at-large team, but I don't see them actually, what is it, sweeping their way through the conference tournament because there's just too many landmines that they have to step around, whether it's a VCU or a Dayton. But by the same token, it's rare that you see VCU get dump trucked like they did against Dayton last Friday night.
So you're saying Fordham still has a chance?
The way it's going, what? Speaking of pitiful, I mean, look at this. With the exception of Rhode Island, this is an under-the-radar level conference all of a sudden. And this is our favorite league. I talk about it every preseason. I like that we cover this league. It's good basketball programs, rather large fan bases, at least at the top of it, in big markets. It's poorly covered. I've railed on their media deal for years. This conference really should be covered more for as good as it typically is. This is just – I kind of started to feel it last year, but this year it's even worse. Is this conference trending down much like the Mountain West is, and is it going to be able to resuscitate itself to where you're getting 3 and 4 bids a year and you're sending at least most, other teams to the NIT? There's maybe 2 NIT caliber teams in this conference.
Mm-hmm. Look
at that.
Good. I think it's just in a down cycle, much like the Mountain West is in right now, but even the Mountain West is starting to point back up where they at least have, I would say, 2 viable teams right now.
The loss of Shaka Smart is a big deal to this conference because I only see one. The Bonnies are the only NIT team.
They are, yeah. VCU, yeah, so you got Rhodey.
VCU is still should still be a solid program, and if Shaka Smart was there getting the players, some of the players who followed in Texas or whenever, I think VCU could be competing with Rhode Island at the top of this conference. His loss has a domino effect all the way down.
How about Will Wade's loss? Look at what he's doing at LSU this year.
Yeah, Will Wade did a good job.
Yeah, yes, I should have mentioned Will Wade as well. Exactly right.
Rhode Island this week hosting UMass, then at Dayton. It's one of the more interesting games, the Dayton team that has – a quarter of a pulse, at least compared to the rest of the conference, I guess you'd have to say. Yeah. But Tytel, let's head over to the Mountain West here. We've been talking about this Nevada Boise State thing. Is that where we're still talking at this point? Do you think this could be a two-bid league?
I do. And what's interesting is I don't think these are two teams like struggling. Well, Boise is on the bubble. I think as of last week, I didn't have him in. I think I am going to put him in next week. Stay tuned. Nevada, they might be wearing white on the first day of the tournament, which I understand that being 5-0 in a weak conference like the Mountain West isn't great. Look at all the metrics, 29th in the AP poll. Like, this team is really solid, and is, I think, one of the top 32 teams in the nation.
I would agree with that. I agree.
Yeah, and David, the big score from this week, though, was actually Boise's huge, real nice home win over a San Diego State team that's been up and down but does have good metrics themselves.
Yeah, and it was one that Boise needed. The thing about Boise, they have a lot of decent wins. They don't have any that are really good, but I think there's enough decent on there to propel them inside the bubble. They'll get their chance against Nevada.
They desperately need a win against Nevada.
You think so? I'm not so sure they do.
They have no wins. I mean, seriously, you got to beat someone in the tournament. You really do. This SMU situation has really hurt them also. The SMU needs to recover because then all of a sudden that makes that loss not as bad. They desperately need to get a win against somebody who'll be playing in March in the Big Dance. And Nevada will be. So that's.
Yeah, they see their best wins are San Diego State, Oregon, Illinois State. That's not, it's tough to find an NCAA tournament team on their wins there until you get down to maybe a team like a Loyola Chicago if they could win an auto bid out
in the Missouri Valley, and they're actually looking pretty good at that.
Yeah. But here's the upcoming schedule and the big game. Circle it here coming up on Saturday, though, David. Boise State at Nevada.
Yep, and it's a big one. Now, if they get that one, then they're in solid shape. But I don't think they're going to sink too much if they fail to win at Nevada.
What Joby was just saying, they need that big win. Maybe it's got to be the home game. Maybe it's got to be the road trip to San Diego State late in the season. But I agree with Joby. They need one more nice piece here.
Stubbing your toe.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate for them. They can't lose to New Mexico.
Salika, West Coast Conference, where Gonzaga wins two more games fairly easily. St. Mary's wins two more games fairly easily. Anything of note from what you saw this week?
Well, you can look at BYU getting a couple wins themselves just to, I guess, also be the telltale heart of the West Coast Conference where they're still beating. But San Diego, unfortunately, lost a game to Pacific, who has now gotten into a three-way tie for third here. But at the same time, I think St. Mary's might be like Cincinnati in some ways, where we really don't know how good they are because they didn't schedule accordingly. But they're certainly winning at the pace they need to for the time being.
Well, two things. First of all, Joby, let me go with you with this first question here. Gonzaga, some really strange numbers. RPI of 56.
Yeah.
Predictive metrics here in the top eight.
I think they're somewhere in between, but I love this Gonzaga team still. I think they play tough. They've done what they've needed to out of conference. They do what I wish more under, if you want to call them under the radar, or at least borderline under the radar, teams do. They go out, they take on all comers, and they've established a brand that allows people then to go, oh, he lost to Gonzaga, no big deal. You know, they're going out and they're playing in Washington, the in-state guys. I am on the Zags bandwagon. If they run the table with maybe a loss at St. Mary's, I think a protected seat is in order.
They were pretty good last year.
Yeah, Tytel, the other thing, of course, circle it here Thursday night, round one of two between the two teams, St. Mary's, Gonzaga. What do you think about this game?
I think the Zags better show up to play because I understand that St. Mary's hasn't beaten up on the best teams in the nation. Their best win so far is BYU, who's not even top 50. That was in overtime. That being said, the Gales have two losses all year, both neutral sites, both the power conference teams, by a total of 7 points. They're 7 points away from being undefeated, which nobody in the nation is, as everyone knows. I don't know if they can beat Gonzaga on the road. It's tough in Spokane, but I don't think this is going to be like a double-digit or more blowout by the Zags. I think St. Mary's is going to give them a hard time. And if they pull off the upset, you might want to start talking about the Gales wearing white.
Ooh, okay. Well, definitely a big game for this week here. One of the best games of the week, I think.
Go
ahead here. But on that note, I guess, let me go ahead and pull these down here. And I'm going to run through final thoughts. And Tytel, I know there's something you wanted to discuss here in your final thoughts. So let me go ahead and get a picture up here for you and turn to you.
Thank you. So as the college basketball historian of the group, it was with great sadness that I heard about the passing of that man right there, JoJo White, from cancer today at age 71. To give you a very brief bio, because the full bio would take forever, All-American at Kansas, he's playing in the 1966 Midwest Regional Final. They're in overtime. He makes a 35-foot runner to win the game, but the ref said he was out of bounds. If you go back and look at it, his shoe was like kind of on the court but leaning up, so I don't know if we'll ever know for sure. Jayhawks end up losing by 1 point in double overtime. The eventual champion team from Texas Western. They made a movie about it, Glory Road. Go see it. 2 years later, 68, he wins a gold medal. He gets drafted, not just by the Celtics to play basketball, by Dallas to play football, and by Cincinnati to play baseball. Amazing all-around athlete. Anything else? Yes, he served in the Marines. Goes to Boston, wins two titles in the greatest game ever played, Game 5 of the 1976 Finals against my Suns. He had the most points in the game, 33. He played 60 freaking minutes in the two-point triple overtime win. God bless JoJo White. I hope he rests in peace. Amazing, amazing player.
I can't do anything but echo everything you just said there, but let me just run through the rest of your final thoughts, Joby.
I certainly can't top this. One thing I always like to do is we talk about the metrics and all that sort of thing, is bring out the impact of playing in particular conferences. I've been focused on the Big 12 a little bit. I'll go to the ACC. It is remarkable that you can see every game in the ACC, it seems like every week, you see two teams, one team in, one team out, barely, and then the team out will win, and you'll reverse places. I think you need to look over and over again at your NC States, Boston Colleges, Syracuse's, Notre Dame's, Louisville's. Not all these teams are going to get in, guys, you know, ACC fans. Oh, and other people in the country, a lot of them will, because they will beat – someone has to win when the teams play. When you see a situation like that about, say, in Virginia Tech, when you see six teams all around the bubble, the best way to think of it is it's a tournament within itself when they play each other. Three are probably going to survive, and three are probably going to be going to the NIT.
Exactly. Stalika?
We do have a little bit of a lighter note here, and this actually involves one of the Puppet's favorite coaches in Tim Miles, because going into Nebraska's game at Penn State, Miles had actually left his suit in Lincoln. So what happens is, this was according to the Big Ten telecast, Pat Chambers actually hooks Miles up with his tailor in State College and actually hooked him up with a nice new suit going into the game at Penn State. But unfortunately, it did not yield the desired result for Nebraska, as they ended up losing in overtime.
I'll talk about teams that are not getting their desired results. As we come to the end of our podcast here, Oklahoma down 12 at Kansas State. Texas A&M also losing at home to Ole Miss. So two teams that we were talking about earlier in the show, Oklahoma continuing to struggle and Texas A&M continuing to find ways to play themselves right out of a tournament contention. But David, let me let you finish things off.
It doesn't happen every year, but I'd say it happens more than half the years, is at the end of January, beginning of February, or at least now, there's a team that isn't on anyone's radar, that no one's talking about, that goes on a tear and makes the NCAA tournament. I don't think anybody did it last year, but 2 years ago we had Wisconsin. They were hovering around 500. What's that?
Vanderbilt, did somebody do it? Team last?
Yeah, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt did it last year, and I'm just kind of curious who it's going to be. It's gotten to the point to where I've tried to guess who I think it's going to be. I always guessed wrong. I think last year I said I thought it would be Oklahoma. Could it be K-State? Looking really good right now, as you mentioned, coming off of a really heartbreaking loss against a really good Kansas team. But again, don't be surprised. There's someone that we haven't really talked about all year that we didn't talk about tonight that could get scorching hot and end up not just in the field, but in the top half of it.
Well, I like you all know, I've always been a huge Bruce Weber fan. Just as much as I enjoy watching American basketball and watching UConn struggle to score 10 points and a half. But on that note, I want to thank everybody for joining us on behalf of David Griggs, John Titel, John Stalika, and Joby Fortson. I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll talk to you again real soon.